This is OTB AM.
Let's tell you something about Nathan now. I think he said the other night, I was listening to his commentary, actually, I got the first half of his commentary the other night. Great reader of a stat, he's just not a great reader of the game. And that's not something that I thought about. I was thinking it when I was driving. I was thinking, he's a great man for a stat, but, oh, come on.
OTB AM, Ireland's only sports breakfast show, weekdays from 7:30 AM, only on OTB Sports Radio. Live 24/7 on the OTB Sports app. The OTB Podcast Network.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
This is News Talk.
Well, hello there. The dust is settling on the European Super League. We will talk to Simon Cooper over in Paris. Plus, Dave McIntyre and Dan McDonald will be along on the football show after nine. Mona McSharry, 21 years of age, is heading to the Olympics. She qualified yesterday at the Swim Ireland Trials. We'll chat to Mona later on this evening. Plus, Wednesday night rugby. It's fair to say the Rainbow Cup isn't exactly living up to its billing. There's also Tadhg Furlong's ongoing contract negotiations. Plus, Ireland-Italy this weekend. Rory O'Connor of the Irish Independent is on the way. 53106, the text number. Do get in touch. We are at Off the Ball on Twitter. Richie McCormack, hello to you.
How are you, Joe? You well?
Very well, sir. And then happy to say, a man who I am reliably told by Sunday evening had sent the European Super League his CV to be their lead in-house commentator, Dave McIntyre. Hello to you.
Guilty as charged. Evening, Joe.
Dear Florentino, I cost a lot, but I'm willing, said Dave.
Well, ultimately, I think the main reason behind this shambles falling apart is because they realised they simply couldn't afford me.
Well, indeed. What a week, Dave. Billionaires making a show of themselves, making a cack-handed effort to get this off the ground and then being utterly humiliated and apologising to boot. I mean, it was a beautiful 72-hour period.
Yeah, if you're a fan of watching people in these sort of situations grovelling as they have been forced to do over the last 36 to 48 hours, yeah, I'm sure there are plenty of people who took a great modicum of pleasure from that, but there are no winners in this, really. I know there are football fans across England in particular that feel the fans have won the day, but have they really? I know their influence has probably been felt over the last day or two, but when you look at the big picture and what these people tried to do to the game of football across the world and what we're still left with in terms of the new Champions League format and the apologies that are as insincere as you could ever really imagine. No one has won here. And it's been, in some ways, yeah, it's been a good day, good couple of days for football. In other ways, it's been a disastrous couple of days.
Yeah, I agree with you. I found myself listening to a lot of talk sport over the last couple of days, and I think everyone is watching Sky Sports News, and now the go-to line is very much the fans have won. The fans have won. And I just think it's patronising. I think they're just saying it to get clicks because it's the fans listening and they're placating them and treating them like idiots, to be honest. John Barnes was on BBC Breakfast this morning, I thought, spoke really well about the whole thing. And he was saying, look, the fans have won business. I mean, come on. He said, we're at the stage now where we have multi-billionaires who own the clubs, and so the power struggle is between elite groups. So it's these new batch of owners versus UEFA, FIFA, Sky, BT, etc. It was simply a fight to see which one of them would get to exploit the masses for the next generation of football. So with this victory, are ticket prices coming down? No. Will subscription TV come down? No. The winners of this battle are UEFA, i.e. the status quo, who already treat fans pretty poorly. So, look, they've won the battle, they've lost the war. They're back to a status quo which treats them pretty poorly and results in their clubs mired in debt unless they're owned by an oligarch or an oil state. So the fans have won, like, briefly.
Yeah, very briefly. And look, there's no doubt that the outpouring of emotion and horror at what had taken place on Sunday night has had some influence on these owners, but the owners didn't see fit to discuss this with the fans beforehand. To say that their opinions have been totally swayed by the fact that the fans have reacted so terribly, it wouldn't have taken very much in terms of PR to canvass the fans if their opinion meant that much to them in the build-up to this. I mean, I'm sure they have outlets whereby they can just discuss things with fan supporters groups, and some of them are very closely connected to some of these clubs, but they didn't bother because they just don't care. They absolutely do not care, but particularly the look, I know the term legacy fan has been thrown around in the last 48 hours. Those who supported these clubs for the last 50 years, those who have been going to the stadia for the last generation and that have been paying through the nose for the season tickets, that have been forced to pay huge amounts for away tickets in the Premier League, that have travelled to watch these clubs across Europe and the Europa League and the Champions League over the last decade or so, they do not care what these people think.
Yeah.
And for them to try and imply in the sort of grovelling apologies that they've been coming out with over the last 24 hours is laughable. I hope there aren't fans that think that these apologies are acceptable. I mean, Joel Glazer spoke today about rebuilding the trust with Manchester United fans. Find me a Manchester United fan that had any trust in Joel Glazer prior to the last 2 or 3 days, and you'll spend an awful lot of time trying to find that person, because they had absolutely no trust in them beforehand. They definitely don't have them now. So there really is no need for Joel to go down the road of trying to rebuild trust between the club's ownership and the supporters. But this should not be surprising, what's happened over the last couple of days. I mean, what did the Premier League think would happen when they allowed clubs to be sold to these sorts of individuals? I mean, it should not be a surprise that we reach this day ultimately. You know, the authorities in Spain should not be surprised that Barcelona and Real Madrid, who are still, as we know, part of this Super League, they opted to go down this route because they have allowed them build enormous amounts of debt. And it's those clubs that are hit most drastically by this shambolic fall of the European Super League. A lot of the blame has been sent to the door of the American owners. I mean, of all the people involved in terms of the 12 clubs, the 12 chairpersons, the 12 owners, they're least affected by this. It's the clubs that so desperately needed the cash injection, the Italian clubs and the Spanish clubs, that will be most significantly affected by this. All this means for the owners of Arsenal and Manchester United and Liverpool is that they will just make less profits over the next 10 years than they might have done under this alternative structure.
Yeah. Rich, as the whole thing settles down and you reflect more on the effort of this Super 12 group to launch this thing, it's actually unbelievable how incompetent it was. I mean, there were some big structural problems. So not having the German clubs, not having PSG, already you were thinking, well, how is this going to work? But then the launch of it, you know, at stupid o'clock on a Sunday night with the various statements on some websites and not on others. Florentino Perez, the only one who spoke on Monday. I mean, did he consult with them? Was this the plan, that Florentino would speak for all of us and give a sham of an interview? Or did he even consult with the other 11? I doubt it. I doubt he rang up the Inter Milan chair and said, I'll do the talking on Monday night for us all. It was just that the others went to ground. And the more I think about it, so from an English perspective, and that's where the reaction was strongest, it seems, from the fans. So you've 6 teams in England going, and like their league is the most competitive. So you could anticipate the strongest reaction there. Like, they threw it out. Like, Gary Neville shaped the narrative. You know, they just like opened the floor to Neville, and he did it brilliantly on Sunday. And like, it's a rhetorical masterclass. You know, I mean, he's saying things which, if you were to drill down into them in parts, there's, I don't know about the substance. Like, he was saying things like, the pandemic, all we've had is our football. They're taking our football away from us. Mm-hmm. I mean, it sounds great, and it would get you fired up. I'm not sure what it means, but, you know, and it's a criminal act. And in the absence then of anything, bar Florentino Perez, he gets another run at it again across Monday. And it's like, did they not think they'd have to win hearts and minds? This statement is all they threw out. And at the very least, they could have invoked tribalism. Like, they should have said, get your own fans on board. Find a way to do this. Get your players on board. Get your manager on board. Get this sold. Get Jurgen Klopp on Monday to come out and say, well, you know, if you think about it, these are the reasons this could kind of work, and it probably would be better for us, and, you know, we'll still have 5 or 6 of the teams each year, and it will mean more football and more money for everyone. You know, kind of sell it, because there's nothing like tribalism in football. But they didn't even do that. Like, it's so noticeable that even the fans of the breakaway clubs, not least in the Premier League, were some of the biggest critics of it. And see, so you kind of think, like, they're preparing this for presumably months. Would you not, like, if you're sitting around that table, how wouldn't you have said, these very smart people, supposedly. Why wouldn't anyone have said, there's going to be a big backlash to this. How do we win the PR war? That's going to be really crucial in the first few days here.
On Monday, I mentioned on the show that there seemed to be such a force of momentum and there seemed to be such a huge break that it seemed like it was going to happen. And the more you drill down into it and the more you see how this has fallen apart, the more I'm of the mind where I was this time last night, whereby it seems more evident that this thing, whatever it was built to fail. And down to the really meat and potatoes logo that they put out, the crappy website, the, you know, mishmash statements that went on some websites and went on others, the fact that managers were informed of this really last minute. We heard about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer finding out last minute, and the players and Harry Maguire taking issue with Ed Woodward over that similar situation at Liverpool, which resulted in their statement last night. I'd like to know how you get out of 23-year contracts that were apparently signed among 12 clubs. Do they just go away?
I think they all just they all just agree that didn't work out. Let's not all sue each other. Disbanded.
Yeah, but you know yourself, Joe. That doesn't happen in the real world. That doesn't happen. Similarly,
would you not think this will? Like, they're all sitting around. This isn't going to happen. Let's sign a new contract to disband it.
Someone's going to sue someone, and I think the very fact that Barcelona and Real Madrid have been the last to withdraw and not actually say anything about this publicly kind of tells a tale. Similarly, I mean, Tariq Panja pointed it out on Instagram earlier this evening. If you actually look at AC Milan's statement, it doesn't really say that they're actually withdrawing. Mm. It kind of dances around it in terms of language and says that they're going to have a think about this and do what's best for the club and all that kind of stuff. But it doesn't mention we are withdrawing from this. And others, similarly, last night among the English clubs were talking about discussions about disbanding and those kind of ways around it. Like, you don't just get out of 23-year contracts. You don't just go back to JP Morgan and say, oops, a few fans didn't like this. We're going to actually have to, you know, draw back or give back this money that we've, you know, drawn down from you and cut this agreement that we've had in place, seemingly. Either they are complete doofuses and this has been just an omni-shambles of epic proportions, or there is something really unsavory at play here and they probably have just tried to open some sort of schism. Like, take UEFA, like Manchester City last night, the first team to actually put out a statement and say, listen, we don't want this. We're going to row back on this. Like, within minutes, Alexander Čeferin, I'm not getting involved in, you know, conspiracy theories, but Alexander Čeferin, the UEFA president, had a statement of his own out welcoming City back to the UEFA family. Not even a talk of or a mention of a possible reprisal or a punishment or a, yeah, bloody right, you know, or just leaving it and letting it settle and letting seeing who else comes down. Like, there was a statement ready to go from UEFA about Man City within seconds. Like, there's a bad smell about all this, and I don't think we're even 25% way through of discovering what's actually at play here, because,
I don't fully follow. What's the point you mean about Čeferin's statement?
Why would he have that good to go straight away?
I presume Man City tipped him off. Man City said, look, we're coming back.
Why would you welcome back a club who've done so much to undermine your system? Why would you immediately say, welcome back to the family?
Because it reestablishes you as top dog and it makes it easier for all the others to come back, and then suddenly this whole thing's over, I guess.
But it's not over. The Super League is over, yes, but in terms of punishments, it can't be over. Like, they need to face action for undermining. Like, you had people who were negotiating on behalf of the ECA for this reformed Champions League, which comes in 2024, as recently as Friday, walking away 48 hours later and saying they were forming their own Super League. So they've effectively brought about change in a competition that they said they've no interest 48 hours later in competing in. It's a grubbier situation, and it's more I think there's more detail and nuance to it than perhaps we're even seeing at this stage. But I don't think we're hearing the last of it. I don't think the ugliness about this is going to dissipate within the next round of games in the Premier League. There's stuff still to come from this that I would say would be pretty unpleasant.
Yeah. You're talking here like a man who knows what's going on, like you're in some kind of Discord group with UEFA. I want to know what you're saying here. Just spit it out. What are you saying?
I think the Super League and the announcement on Sunday is part of a bigger long game that these clubs are perhaps UEFA are playing. And like, there's talk that UEFA had offered, you know, they were offering, you know, basically money on a similar level that they were going to get through this Super League for teams to come back and say, listen, we have this line of credit open from these London investors and blah, 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 blah. I just think that it's not necessary. What we're seeing and what we've seen over the past 48 hours is not on the level. I think there's more to this that we're going to find out over the coming weeks, months, and possibly even years, that it there's just something off about it. There's really something off about it beyond it just 12 teams trying to take control of a European competition.
Okay. We'll see. I mean, I don't know. I think they've just weakened themselves, actually. And going forward, it's going to be harder for them to try and get something similar off the ground now, because the idea is so weakened and so tarnished in everybody's minds. Personally, sorry, we can drag this out all day. And are you saying UEFA are somehow in cahoots here and wanted all this to happen for some reason?
I don't think they wanted it to happen, but I think it's like they've passed through. They've had this really horrible Champions League format passed through on Monday, the day after this all, you know, blew up. Yeah. And this seems like a footnote. And everybody should look at this Champions League format and say no.
Oh, well, because, that's true, yeah.
Like, even looking at the thing that we've made issue of over the last two nights about the two places going to quote-unquote legacy teams in the competition, the entire competition itself and the format that they're bringing in is awful. It's unwieldy. Yeah. It favours the big teams. And again, it's like alluding to what John Barron said there, you still have your top threes, fours, and possibly fives from certain leagues getting into this thing. And it's a Champions League that is unwilling to welcome champions into it.
Well, that's one last interesting point before we do start the news round, Dave, is the reforms on Monday announced by UEFA. Funny, I sort of think that UEFA could now turn around if they wanted and say, this reformed Champions League, which you all drove, Agnelli and co, you all drove this. Nobody thinks it's that good. We're actually going to stick with the Champions League as is. Hey, what are you going to do? Start your own European Super League?
Yeah, I don't think there's any punishments going to be meted out by UEFA. But yeah, UEFA's position has definitely been strengthened. I certainly don't see a rollback on the agreed proposals for the revamp of the Champions League. I think we're going to be stuck with that. It's the Premier League and the respective domestic leagues that I look at now and really hope that there is a repercussion for these clubs for what they've done. Now, I know from a Premier League's point of view, it's difficult because there's the whole 14 versus 6, and you do need 15 votes for somebody to be punished. But for them to essentially throw the Premier League under the bus and go a long way down the road of destroying everything that the Premier League stood for. Now, it's not that the Premier League is a modicum of goodness either, but for you potentially be looking at a season where really the only place that was of any merit was the first place, championship winners, or the bottom three, and everything in between was utterly irrelevant. I mean, that would have destroyed the Premier League's brand. I do hope they find a way to punish these clubs, whether it's points deductions or fines, transfer embargoes. I'm not sure if we'll see any of that, but these six clubs definitely deserve to be put in a position where they can't just walk away from what they've attempted to do over the last couple of days unscathed and just return to the status quo and return to where things were Saturday morning. I just really hope that is not the case.
The news round is with thanks to Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette made of what matters. You're starting with Joe Glazer, Rich.
Yeah, the Manchester United co-chairman says they got things wrong regarding the club's Super League involvement. United withdrew their participation last night, with Glazer saying they want to rebuild trust with supporters in an open letter. He says the European football model still requires addressing, but the Super League was the wrong way to go about it. Real Madrid and Barcelona are the only two clubs yet to formally announce their withdrawal from the venture. Italian sides Juventus and AC Milan said they wanted out earlier today, and Juventus chairman Andrea Agnelli has stated his belief that the Super League cannot go ahead.
Look, I think to be frank and honest, no. Evidently, that's not the case. So, I mean, I wouldn't be talking so much about where that project has gone. I remain convinced of the beauty of that project, of the value it would have developed to the pyramid, of the creation of the best competition in the world. But admittedly, no. I mean, I don't think that that project is now still up and running.
So Agnelli is still saying, look, this is a really good idea, whereas John Henry, for instance, came out and couldn't have looked more mortified or more grovelling this morning.
Yeah, he probably recorded this in the wee small hours of the Boston morning, but the English contingent, as we know, withdrew all night, and this morning Liverpool owner John W. Henry apologised for their involvement.
I want to apologise to all the fan supporters of Liverpool Football Club for the disruption I caused over the past 48 hours. Goes without saying, but should be said, that the project put forward was never going to stand without the support of the fans. No one ever thought differently in England. over these 48 hours, you were very clear that it would not stand. We heard you. I heard you. And I want to apologize to Jurgen, to Billy, to the players, and to everyone who worked so hard at LFC to make our fans proud. They have absolutely no responsibility for this disruption. They were the most disrupted, and unfairly so. This is what hurts most. They love your club and work to make you proud every single day. I know the entire LFC team has the expertise, leadership, and passion necessary to rebuild trust and help us move forward.
Mm. Some Texan, I love the fact Dave is rocking the old school commentary mic. Shame he ruined the look by not wearing his sheepskin coat. Graham making nachos in Monaghan. How you doing, Graham? Is it not a coincidence City and Chelsea were first to go after being threatened with Champions League expulsion, says Kieran. I mean, possibly. We keep hearing they weren't as on board as everybody else. They certainly weren't in that immediate cohort leading the charge. But hey, maybe Champions League expulsion did focus minds, all right.
Well, it doesn't seem to be focusing the Real Madrid mind, does it?
True. They were very much leading the charge. Maybe Chelsea and City less bothered and suddenly thinking we're going to be out of the Champions League. Oh, this isn't worth the hassle. But who knows? Yeah, it's a fair point on Madrid. What do fans expect when the institutions have let a Russian oligarch, a petronation, some profit-driven American owners take control of their clubs? You can't be happy to take money from questionable owners and then expect the fans to be treated fairly. It started with Sky. The hypocrisy is amusing. It will come up again in a few years. It's only about the money, Brian Cork. Further to your point, I think, Rich, John and Limerick, gents, this was a deliberate opening strategy, an opening gambit to test the opposition. It's a softening up exercise. These big teams see major payola from this deal. The Sharks will be back for a second bite. I mean, if it was an opening strategy and they didn't think it was going to work at all, it was a really dumb one. Because now this thing is so toxic in the minds of all fans that it's going to take a hell of an effort to get this over the line a second time. That's why, Rich, I slightly differ with you. I mean, I'm sure there's all types of politicking and strategizing going on. But if this was, as John in Limerick says, a kind of softening up exercise, a testing of the water, like the backlash has been so frenzied, like even anything that smells like a European Super League coming forward in the next couple of years will be met with the same rancor. So they've created such a rod for their own backs.
Well, they voted in the European Super League as of Friday. It's coming their way in 2024.
The UEFA version.
It's just the UEFA version.
Yeah. The Super League.
It's not a version that destroys domestic leagues, though, Richie. And it is still a version whereby you qualify on merit. Not wrong with it. But I don't think it's fair to equate the two competitions. The damage that would have been done to the Premier League, to La Liga, Serie A, would have been catastrophic and permanent. The new revamped Champions League has a dirty look to it in a lot of ways, but it doesn't go anywhere near as far as the ESL in terms of the damage it would have wrought on the product that we enjoy in the Premier League in Spain and Italy.
I'd just like to see how you get out of a 23-year contract and out of a JP Morgan contract. Like, those things aren't easily done.
Mm. Yeah, I haven't seen many leaks about the nature of those contracts or how binding they are. It was interesting. Gary Neville did say last night from his frat house that he hopes they all end up suing each other for $100 million. You know, he said, I hope Florentino Perez sues the lot of them for $100 million and they eat each other. So there's definitely that possibility, to be fair, that they've signed something and they're now behind the eight ball. I guess it might be just mutually exclusive for them all to let this wither away, if that's possible. Owen says this Super League was almost as disappointing as Nathan's son asking for an England jersey. Almost. Well, indeed, Owen. Still no updates on that one. We'll keep you posted. Breaking news if it happens. So we're back to football as we love it, Richie.
Yeah, the people's game. Ryan Mason in temporary charge of Tottenham for the first time this evening. Gareth Bale back in the starting lineup for Spurs, and he's pulled out the equaliser for them at home to Southampton. It was Danny Ings, 11th of the season, gave the Saints the lead at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. At 8:15, Manchester City can re-establish an 11-point lead at the top of the Premier League table. Pep Guardiola's side are away to Aston Villa. Dublin unlikely to host matches at Euro 2020. That's according to the tarnished Leo Varadkar. UEFA is to make a final decision on Friday regarding the status of Dublin, Bilbao and of Munich. European football's governing body wants stadiums to operate at 25% capacity for the tournament. Speaking to Today FM earlier today, Fracker thinks June would be too soon for that to occur at the Aviva.
Last I heard now, and I might be out of date, was that the organisers were looking for us to commit to having at least 25% of the stadium full. And we're just very cautious about that. We just think June is too soon. I think if they continue to insist on that, it'll be hard for it to go ahead, quite frankly, which is unfortunate. But that was the last I knew. And it was going to be great. Now I remember the day we got those games, and I was on to, I think, John Delaney, remember him, was on to me to tell me that we won the games, and at that stage I thought Ireland was going to qualify, and I thought this would be great to have a couple of home games in Dublin, but we didn't, and then a pandemic came along, and unfortunately looks like it's one of those things that just didn't turn out.
God, it's something. Even Leo Varadkar, who had to hand over his phone to the Gardaí at the weekend, can have a dig at Delaney. That's where the stock is. Like, there's no one too low. So Mayo, straight in. I mean, now that we're back training, they're like drama headlines. Yes, please.
Yeah, they face an anxious wait regarding the fitness of Captain Aidan O'Shea. He sustained a knee injury during yesterday's first group training session of the squad ahead of the inter-county season. O'Shea will have the injury assessed by the Mayo medical team before being sent for a scan later this week. Mayo begin their defence of the Connacht football title against Sligo in just under 9 weeks' time.
So we'll see how that goes. Meanwhile, news from Kerry, Peter Keane.
Yeah, Kerry football manager Peter Keane says they'll miss Peter Crowley's energy, determination and experience. The all-star defender and 2014 All-Ireland winner has called time on his inter-county career. Crowley missed the 2019 campaign due to injury issues and has cited work commitments as the other reason for his decision. While Connacht have signed the Irish qualified back Mac Hansen from Australian Super Rugby side the Brumbies, the 23-year-old signed a two-year contract at the sports ground, and Hansen qualifies for Ireland through his County Cork mother. As you mentioned there at the top of the show, Pro 14 and South African sides are going to be kept apart in the forthcoming Rainbow Cup. Tournament organisers have confirmed they'll be operating dual tournaments. They say all options were explored and exhausted, but travel won't be possible between South Africa and Europe. South Africa is currently on the red list for entry into Ireland and the UK. Teams from Ireland, Scotland and Wales will now compete in a Northern Rainbow Cup, while South African teams Sharks, Stormers, Lions and Bulls, oh my, will play a separate competition against one another.
Bit of a disaster this one, Dave. I mean, I know these things are difficult. It was always ambitious to try and set up a Rainbow Cup this early in the year, given the pandemic. But I mean, they did cash in a lot to do it. Like, the Pro 14 was curtailed. There were no quarterfinals. There were, you know, the set piece final happened like the week after the Six Nations. It kind of, you know, it wasn't the greatest way for the Pro 14 to kind of sign off, as was all for. Well, what are we left with now? This kind of weird Pro 14 on repeat kind of a thing.
That pretty much sums it up. That's essentially what we are going to be looking at over the next few weeks, just another Pro 14 season. Difficult to get excited about. I do feel sorry for the organisers. As you say, they took a real gamble in bringing the business end of the Pro 14 season forward, and look what they're left with now. I can see why they wanted to do it. They do want to introduce these South African franchises before the 2021-22 season gets up and running. We can be introduced to them, get a feel for what they're going to bring to the competition. Oh, and I'm sure they will bring a lot over the next few seasons, but this isn't anybody's first choice. Look, I know the unions are desperate for some revenue, and there will be broadcast deals and everything around this, and there will be some good rugby on offer. There are a lot of lines, places maybe to be played for over the next few days, the next first couple of rounds, but I know that team is about to be announced as well. So after that, a bit of silverware, but not ideal for anybody involved, and it's been a really difficult last few months for the organisers of the Pro 14. I think they're doing the best they can.
Yeah.
But their hands are tied behind their backs in many ways.
Spurs have just scored against Southampton, 75 minutes on the clock. Looks like Son, who has scored for Spurs. So 2-1 up, 75 minutes on the clock. And finally, lads, would you shush? McCormack has got the inside scoop here. He knows what's what, says Tommy. Well, indeed. Richie, you're blowing this one wide open.
I'm just leaving some scope open for a bit of mystery in your life, Joe.
No, I
figure
you.
We all need it.
I hear you. Look, I definitely take the point that there's nothing beyond them. There's nothing beyond them. But I don't know. I just feel like it's been such a mess from the 12's perspective. I just think it's just all on them. And I feel like UEFA genuinely were blindsided. But who knows? Who knows? Look, I hear you. There may well be more wrinkles in this. There's going to be a lot of like pieces written over the next month where journalists get stuck in and talk to the various protagonists.
Who does the first book, Joe?
Oh, it's a hell of a question. Maybe our next guest, Simon Cooper. Think he could do it?
There you go. Yeah, absolutely.
Lads, we'll leave it there. Richie, thank you as ever.
Mind yourselves.
Dave McIntyre, we will check back in with you on the football show, Dave.
Looking forward to it.
Very good. Up next, we do have the very brilliant Simon Cooper with us.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.